everyone, and welcome back to Dropping the Hammer with Dale McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Dale McFadden, general assignment reporter at the paper and part-time NASCAR podcaster. And along for the ride with me, as always, is the other part-time podcaster on the staff here at the Gazette, Jared Haas. How's it going, Jared?
It's going. Like I said, I was on the fence with Bristol Dirt. I feel like I'm glad it's in the rearview mirror for how much of the, I don't say controversy, but hot button topic that's been Bristol Dirt.
Yep, we are here to talk about round three of the experiment that is racing on Bristol Dirt. And this time, the race was won by someone with an actual dirt experience, Christopher Bell.
He could do is focus straight ahead.
White flag. Credit One Bank. Crash on the back stretch. One car stopped against the inside wall.
Still going, still green.
And he's rolling. We're still green.
Oh, he's in the fence. Chastain on the outside. Caution's out.
Caution's out. Stay low.
Christopher Bell.
Race is over.
Comes to the flag. And checkers wave over the Joe Gibbs, number 20.
You won. Hell
Bell,
yeah, buddy. Good
DeWalt,
job.
Joe Gibbs Racing and Toyota are going to victory lane. Finally, a dirt track driver wins the dirt race at Bristol.
So, Christopher Bell beat Tyler Reddick due to a last lap caution involving Ross Chastain. Thanks, Ross. That was shaping up to be an exciting, maybe an exciting finish there at the end of that race. So that was disappointing. But yeah, the top six finishers, Jared, were drivers who have had dirt experience in their background. You had Christopher Bell over Reddick, Austin Dillon third, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. fourth, Chase Briscoe fifth, and Justin Haley sixth.
The cream rises to the top in these occasions on that too, and it finally did. I mean, you had Briscoe and Reddick battling for the lead last year, but they kind of took to each other's self, and Kyle Busch cruised into the win last year. But yeah. Again, I think this proved that you need all types of experience, whether it's road course racing, dirt racing, or oval racing, to perform well in the NASCAR Cup Series.
So we're done with Bristol Dirt for now, at least, maybe after three races. I thought this attempt was the best one yet, except for the actual end result there at the end of the race. We had a lot of cautions, 14 cautions, which I believe matched last year's total, but there was quite a bit of exciting three wide, four wide racing during the race. The best segment of racing up at the front anyway was towards the end of stage two, when you had Kyle Busch, Tyler Reddick, and I believe Austin Dillon in the mix there at the end. They kind of swapped the lead a little bit, but that was really the only time there was any green flag passes for the lead. And I know when it comes to whether you judge whether a race is good or not, it usually comes down to what's happening with the leaders. So that might affect a lot of people's judgments of this race. How do you view that, Jared?
I think there's one thing to note, that there was an important strategy call that happened after the stage one. There were four drivers that stayed out to not pit. It was 2311 Racing's Bubba Wallace and Tyler Reddick. You had Martin Truex Jr. and Ty Dillon also stay out. And you had two of those drivers finish in the top seven. Bubba Wallace was up there. He got in the wall, was put out late, and Ty Dillon got shuffled back as well. So it was really a track position battle. And it's tough with those 14 cautions to try to make passes when you're, you know, like I said, under caution. The average speed, 46 miles per hour. Not as bad as a truck race. That was 39 miles per hour. So, I mean, you could get on the 635 or 435, whatever highway you please, and be faster than this race. So, I mean, it's tough with how many cautions there was. It's hard to develop that racing. And the slingshot move with these stock cars, it seems like they can get side by side. Mm-hmm. With a regular dirt car, you see them just sling in the corner, you know, do the slingshot move. They get out front, and the guy on the high side ducks out low. And then it's, you know, it's that back and forth battle. And even Fox was showing that with flow racing coverage with Jonathan Davenport versus Kyle Larson on dirt race. Mm-hmm. That's because it's kind of more the expectation, but that's not with the stock cars. They were kind of more going, the low car would be maybe get side by side with him, but he wouldn't take the lead and wouldn't push back. So I kind of understand the dirt disappointment on that aspect. But, I mean, it was going to be shaping up for a good finish. Again, Ross Chastain, his wrecked car was in the middle of a racetrack. He had to they had to throw a caution for that.
But in Indiana, it was Christopher Bell getting the win Sunday. He now has five career wins. This is the first win for Joe Gibbs Racing this season. And according to someone who mentioned it during the race winners press conference on Sunday, Bell has more wins than any other active driver, cup driver, in their first 116 starts other than Brad Keselowski, which Brad won early on in his cup tenure with only like just a handful of races.
Yeah.
Bell, it took him a while. You know, his first season was with the now defunct Levine family racing in number 95 before he moved over to number 20 at Joe Gibbs Racing in 2021. That's right. And he won in his second start with JGR on the Daytona Road Course. And then he had three wins last year. Two of those at the Charlotte Road Course and the Martinsville.
Walk-off wins, yeah.
Walk-off wins, elimination races. He had to win those races, and he did it. Got into the championship four. And now here he is with win number one of 2023. So at this point, Jared, how do you – a lot of the talk over the weekend or so was that Bell's kind of like the unsung driver at Joe Gibbs Racing. You know, you got Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., also now Ty Gibbs. So where do you think Christopher Bell is in his rise in the ranks?
I mean, it's a very interesting aspect of Joe Gibbs Racing. You've got the wild veterans of Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex. They're almost in their 40s.
They are solidly in their 40s.
You got Ty Gibbs, who's about like half the age of those drivers. And then I feel like Christopher Bell starting to get into his rhythm where he can be a contender week in and week out, that solid force for Joe Gibbs Racing that they're looking for. And there's a lot of more question marks again with the age of Truex and Hamlin. Who is going to be the driver that is going to be coming up and be that successful driver? It was not Eric Jones. Mm-hmm. They let go of Eric Jones, and now Eric Jones is with Legacy Motor Club.
And nowhere to be seen this season.
Nowhere to be seen. It's hard to see him when he's in a black and gold car at a dirt track. I saw that, and I agree with that point. But I think this is where Christopher Bell can start getting into his prime and start getting that momentum of he's the Joe Gibbs Racing of the future, racing driver of the future. So I think this is a good momentum builder for Bell and the number 20 team, and to say, hey, even though you were looking – the past few years, you look at the 11 team, you look at the 18 team, was Kyle Busch, and the 19 team, I'm the future of Joe Gibbs Racing. And I think that's a statement win for Christopher Bell early on at Bristol Dirt.
Also of note, of the three Bristol Dirt races so far, Joe Gibbs Racing has won two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So here's some post-race audio from Christopher Bell describing what it was like driving on Bristol Dirt this year. And he just describes driving... the car on the track, like wrestling with a pig.
Yeah, I mean, the track was most definitely a very tough surface to get a hold of, and it should have rewarded guys that kind of knew what to expect and how to, you know, get the car around the racetrack, which I think it did. It was a tricky surface. It was very tough to, you know, produce lap time, and I think that's what made it fun too.
Is there a reason that it seemed like all the dirt guys really excelled today compared to the other dirt races here?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the track favored experience on dirt tracks tonight. But at the same, you know, on the same hand, last year, two dirt guys were definitely going to run 1-2 if they didn't get, you know, taken out on the last lap. So with that being said, last year was very similar that two dirt guys were going to run first and second. But tonight, for sure, the track was very tough and certainly favored the guys that had experience on that style of track.
And how did this track challenge you in a different way tonight?
Yeah, so it was just very technical. It obviously got very slippery, and the cushion up top had speed in it if you could run next to it, but the problem was is that if you got over it, you paid a really big penalty and lost a lot of time. And you could get over it with the right rear, and you can get over it with the right front. So it was just a very fine balance of getting the car bent and crooked enough to, you know, ride against it without getting your right rear over it, without getting your right front over it. And you know, these things are just, they're pretty tough to drive on a dirt track, especially whenever you're trying to drift them around the corner. And, you know, you're kind of wrestling a pig out there for however many corners you got. I definitely think that this was the cream of the crop for track conditions. And, you know, I don't think that you're going to get any better than that.
All right, and here's a little bit more from Bell describing that last lap, the closing laps battle with Tyler Reddick. Tyler Reddick again coming up short. You know, I can't say what Reddick was. Reddick went high, Bell went low, but the caution came out. Mm-hmm. Bell said he didn't know the caution was out until he was in turn three.
It flew pretty late. It was like almost going into turn three. They were trying to keep a green as long as you can, and with Ross Chastain, he was down low mm-hmm. when he wrecked, and I don't know if it was the steering. Something broke on that, but his car drifted back up in the track into the groove where it was no choice where. I mean, NASCAR wanted to stay green. It's the final lap, but
One reason I think they couldn't do that, unfortunately, was when Bell and Reddick are coming down the backstretch, there's a huge cloud of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I saw that, I was like, ah, great. And then moments later,
caution.
But yeah, here's what Christopher Bell said about what he had kind of planned on doing with Reddick looming in the mirror on the last lap.
I mean, I was fully committed to block the move. And, you know, I'm sure that he would have given me a little friendly bumper. And, you know, I don't know, I might have spun out, I might not have spun out. But I was prepared to block the move. Maybe that would have caught him off guard. But, you know, I didn't know the yellow flag came out until I had already shown my hand going into turn three. So it was probably going to be an exciting finish, that's for sure.
All right, so it's time for our new weekly segment that we call what, you know, what fries my egg. And so we each got one this week, Jared. But you go first. What is frying your egg week?
You know what fries my egg is kind of more the incident what happened with Kyle Larson and Ryan Preece. There's a difference between racing hard and racing dumb. Understandably, Larson and Preece is a track position battle. But Larson, he tries to use you up as much as he can. Denny Hamlin made these comments
on his podcast
yeah. about how Larson will use you up and can be kind of frustrating. The first incident between Larson and Preece was right after stage one. I believe it was lap 79. And Preece gets in the wall and kind of mess ups his day. And that's still too early in the race to be doing stuff like that, of trying to prevent stuff. You still have a whole another stage. Understandably, positions are important, but that's still one position. It's not racing smart, and you had that incident kind of boil over until I think it was lap 176, where Ryan Preece drifted up, kind of made contact with Kyle Larson, and then Kyle Larson came down on the track into Preece. Larson wrecks out. Larson's day's done, and Ryan Preece, he didn't really finish that well either. I believe Ryan Preece
24th.
Finished 24th. So neither of them really had a good day. So it's racing smart with your brain and not trying to make enemies. And Preece on the radio was like, it's game over for Larson. And he was pretty livid on the radio. And then like his post-race is like, yeah, I didn't do anything. And it's just racing on dirt. I mean, it's the predicament that Denny Hamlin's basically put all these drivers of. It's easier to just, you know, deflect of what's going on than to admit and be truthful. And it's a bad look to have that type of deflection. I mean, it's not Ryan Preece's fault that happens. I'm not going to put all the blame on Denny Hamlin, but it's just not a good look to just say, you know, say one thing on the radio and then you're just like, yeah, you know, nah, it was just racing on dirt.
Well, you know, with the precedent set, man, he doesn't want to risk getting fined 25 points.
25 points, $50,000.
Yeah. That's especially at this point in the season.
Well, I don't blame him either, but it's just the box he's in.
But watching the replay, I really think it was just a racing accident. I think especially the second half of it, Larson came down in the Preece, and then spun off into the wall. So I think If anything, they were maybe both at fault. I don't think there's any single one person to blame.
No, it was a racing ordeal, but you know, Ryan Preece on the radio and what he's been saying the past few weeks.
Oh, he's been very ticked off.
He's been very ticked off, but he just like got out of the car and was just very. I don't know how to describe it. Just very. It was just a racing deal.
Yeah, he called people hacks at COTA after all the fiasco on the restarts at the end, and now you have this. I don't know if it's a combination of he doesn't feel like he's being raced with respect, or he's just generally upset about how the season's going so far for him. But yeah, he's been upset.
Yeah,
for the last month or so. All right, my turn, Jared. Do you know what's frying my egg?
Oh boy, we're gonna hear it this time.
What in the world is a caution? Like, what? I know there were 14 cautions Sunday. All but two were for... Oh, three. All but three were for spins. Single car spins.
You know what you do, Daniel? You just flip a coin. That's when you decide what caution.
I tweeted about it during the race. Like, I feel like I'm watching NASCAR's, like, goalposts for what warrants a caution changing in real time. We had cautions where Ryan Blaney and Michael McDowell do full 360s in the middle of the field on basically restarts, and nothing was called, absolutely nothing, and they just kept racing. And then with how many laps to go?
I think it was
on lap 236 of 250, Kyle Busch went for a spin off of turn four, and he went straight onto the apron on the pit road. Caution.
They put themselves in the predicament of saying what is a caution, what isn't, because when you start calling those cautions, pretty soon you're going to be racking up 16, 18, 20 cautions with those spins in the middle of the field, you're going to have another caution on the restart as well.
I guess there was 14 of them.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
That is a lot, especially considering this race is 250 laps.
Yeah.
This is not the normal, when it's concrete, 500 laps. This is 250 laps. This is half the distance, so... If we went the full 500 laps that they usually did, that's like 30 cautions.
I mean, NASCAR, we've been having this discussion for for a long time, but really dating back to the All-Star race last year at Texas, when I believe it was Stenhouse, just kind of glanced off the wall in the backstretch, and they throw the caution as Ryan Blaney's coming to the checkered flag, and that caused an uproar for a week. But, I mean, the consistency on Sunday was just... or lack of it, anyway, was jarring.
There wasn't any guidelines on the situation to throw cautions. It was just like, we're just going to throw cautions for spins and dirt. You know, it would have been normal for pavement tracks, but this is a dirt track, a little bit different. I mean, if he's on the apron, you can let him get rolling onto pit road. That's fine. But I think NASCAR was stuck in that box for throwing some of those cautions and being like, we got to finish, you know, we don't want to finish where it's too late, but again... we don't want to be throwing cautions when they should be throwing cautions when they need to be throwing cautions.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, 73 laps were run under caution out of the 250. So that's quite a bit. So before we end this segment, we got some audio courtesy of frontstretch.com, where we ply our trade when we're not working here at the Democrat Gazette offices. From this audio is from Jonathan Davenport. He's a super late model driver who made his NASCAR Cup debut Sunday driving for Colleague Racing. So he's a guy with dirt experience. He was taken out of the race when he hit a spinning Kyle Larson on lap 76. He was asked after the race to give a thumbs up or thumbs down on Cup racing on dirt. And to be clear, he said earlier in this interview that he had fun. It was a good experience. But here's his response. Courtesy of our friends at frontstretch.com.
Track conditions was awesome. I had a little character in 3 and 4. You had to move around the holes. That's what a dirt track needs. That makes people move around. But it's getting really slick, and this is when all the cream rises to the top, and they'll put on a good show right here.
Can you give a thumbs up or a thumbs down to this type of dirt racing?
I don't know about this type of dirt racing. You know, I classify this more as a show than a race, really. I mean, these cars ain't built to race on dirt. So, I don't know. I mean, it's cool. It's different. It's a novelty. But, you know, this ain't really true dirt racing. But it's just something different.
All right, Jared, before we move on, Do you think we go back to Bristol Dirt next year?
I don't know. I mean, I wish I had the crystal ball. I think they're still going to be – they might still do it for one more year. But I think the future's kind of bleak for Bristol Dirt for the long term.
Well, Marcus Smith, who's the CEO and chairman of Speedway Motorsports, said the more tickets were sold for the race this year than last year. But if I'm just going off the eye test of the stands on Sunday, it really didn't feel like it at all.
I think there was a picture by, I believe, Joel Edmonds, who's a spotter. And it was like, it looked like it was 30% capacity, but it filled up later into the race. That was, I think, a couple hours before. But still not a good look when I think that was a big argument for people who said, oh, we need to have a dirt race at Bristol on Easter because you look at the Bristol race on the concrete not doing that well.
It wasn't.
But again, I mean, you have this kind of similar attendance. Is it really the problem of just, you know, we need to put dirt on a situation, we need to move the race date, or what is the issue with the, like I said, the attendance? It just took out a few more variables in this situation and made the argument of the attendance a little bit weaker from this year's.
People want to make the argument about racing on Easter. I personally don't care.
Yeah.
If the NBA can play games on Thanksgiving, NFL can play games on Thanksgiving and Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and the NBA can also do Christmas games, NASCAR can race on Easter. So that's my take on it. So anyway, enough with Bristol Dirt, won by Christopher Bell. Moving on to news. All right, so starting off this week's news segment with some rather serious news. It was announced yesterday, we're recording this on Tuesday, it was announced on Monday, that Cody Ware, driver of the number 51 car for Rick Ware Racing, was arrested on Monday and charged with felony assault by strangulation and misdemeanor assault on a female for an incident that occurred on April 3rd. Ware was not present Sunday's race at Bristol. He was replaced by Truck Series driver Matt Crafton after it was announced that Ware had to step away for a personal reason. The arrest occurred in Iredell County, North Carolina. The Iredell County Sheriff's Office listed Ware's bond at $3,000, and the 27-year-old Ware was out by Monday afternoon. He's scheduled to appear in the North Carolina District Court on May 1st. Rick Ware Racing, that's Cody Ware's father, Rick Ware, released a statement after it. We are aware of the incident regarding Cody Ware and his indefinite suspension from NASCAR competition. We understand NASCAR's position on this matter and accept their decision. The matter is still under investigation, and Cody is fully cooperating with the authorities as due process takes its course. Rick Ware Racing is committed to continuing our multi-car efforts in the NASCAR Cup Series and is in the process of finalizing our plans for the number 51 entry at Martinsville Speedway and beyond. Those plans will be announced in the coming days. Like I said, we're recording this on Tuesday. They could announce that this afternoon by the time we publish this. And I don't want to draw any connections between this and the alleged accident, but I believe it should be noted that in recent years, Cody Ware, who's 27, has been very open about his battles with mental illness, including anxiety and depression, and as well as PTSD from an incident from his teenage years when he was set on fire by some friends. So all around, very serious subject. He'll be in court in May, and we'll keep you guys updated on this as that progresses. So moving on to a little bit more happy news, Jared, we got the All-Star Race format at North Wilkesboro, which will be run May 21st. And a couple days before this happened, I tweeted that my dream All-Star Race format at North Wilkesboro would be 250 laps, give the teams 3 sets of tires, and let them go. We got close to that.
You got closer than I did. I wanted a little bit shorter race. I wanted the intensity to be ratcheted up. I feel like All-Star races are just kind of shorter, way shorter than like Coca-Cola 600 weekend. But I'm all right with 200 laps. We got, like I said, it's a very simple type of procedure. It wasn't like what it was at Texas, where it was like, we got six stages, you got to do some math, you're going to be field inverted, field inverted, field inverted. It's just simple. Yeah. Here's stages, here's the lap mounts, go race.
No inversions. There's no fans voting on which cars to send to the back. They're just going to be voting on...
There is a fan vote to get in.
Yeah, yeah.
But not a fan vote to invert the field.
But yeah, here's what it is for the format for the May 21st All-Star Race at North Wilkesboro Speedway. Friday, there will be practice, and there will be a qualifying pit crew challenge. The pit crew challenge will be a four-tire pit stop, no fuel. The results determine the starting lineups for the All-Star Heat Races and the All-Star Open. Saturday, after the Craftsman Truck Series race, there will be two All-Star Heats. There will be 60 laps each. The results of the first race set the inside row for the main event, and the race number two, those results will set the All-Star Race outside row. And then we get to the All-Star Open on Sunday, which will be 100 laps. There will be a competition break on or around lap 40. The top two finishers transfer to the All-Star Race, and there will be the fan vote to get one more driver into it. In both the heat races and the open, the teams will start on sticker tires, and they'll have one additional set in the pit box. All laps count. And then for the All-Star Race itself, to qualify to get into this race, they're permitting the 2022 and 2023 NASCAR Cup points race winners, past All-Star Race winners and NASCAR Cup Series champions, the All-Star Open top two finishers, and the fan vote. Now, the format, like you said, simple for the main event. Simple. 200 laps. All the laps count. Teams start on one set of sticker tires, and they're given three additional sets to have in their pit box. There will be a break period on or around lap 100. Then after that, one final 100-lap segment, and teams are only allowed to switch to a new set of sticker tires once in the final 100 laps. I can't wait.
I can't wait either. And I think one thing, simple note, that was kind of missed in the news of Dale Earnhardt Jr. is actually not going to attempt.
Yeah.
Even though he's eligible, he's not going to attempt the All-Star Race. I think he basically said that the Cup competition's too fierce for him. And I think he was still scheduled to do, like, he's been doing Xfinity races like a year, you know, once a year.
He's actually doing two this year.
Yeah. One in the past, but has two scheduled this year. But I'm excited as well. They haven't run North Wilkesboro since I've been alive.
Yeah, the last NASCAR points race event at North Wilkesboro was 1996. This won't be a points race. The Truck Series race on Saturday will be. Apparently Adam Stevens, who's the crew chief for Christopher Bell, he was asked about North Wilkesboro after the race on Sunday, and he said the lap time fall off on a set of tires was staggering. and that track hasn't been repaved probably in the 80s.
Yeah. Ever since they were going to throw dirt on that track, and then they're like, "Nah, we're not going to throw dirt on that. We're just going to have we're going to bring on the old pavement." So, I'm excited. I know you're excited. This is where it's truly getting back to the grassroots of racing, and I think that's the goal of NASCAR, and they, like I said, we'll see how the weekend goes, but it looks like it's going to be a home run.
Crossing my fingers.
I am too.
Crossing my fingers. It's going to be a madhouse. I'm planning on being there.
Oh, yes.
For frontstretch.com. I think on the three biggest, most anticipated NASCAR events in my lifetime have been the 94 Brickyard 400, Eldora, the first Truck Series race on dirt, the Charlotte Roval, and now I think this.
Yeah.
And I think this is above the last two.
Yeah.
The Brickyard 400 is still, I think, probably above it. But
I know. I don't say I'm jealous, but like I said, at least glad one of us is going to North Wilkesboro.
Well, actually, there's some of you. Of us, yes.
Of us.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm not. I'm going to be behind the scenes.
But yeah, the All-Star Race, that's May 21st, Sunday, and that'll be broadcast on Fox Sports 1, Sirius XM Radio, and the Motor Racing Network. So, all right, moving on to our preview of this weekend's race at Martinsville Speedway. All right, Jared. So Martinsville Speedway, the half mile short track in Martinsville, Virginia. This represents the end of the short track portion of the season. This race last year was disappointing, to say the least. It was held at night. It was extremely cold. I believe there was a rain delay at some point early on in it. There was very, very few lead changes, and I think the only accident for caution, or only caution for an accident, took place in like the last three laps.
There was only one lead change, and that happened on pit road last year. I am thankful that they are not running at night at Martinsville. This package and at night for the cold temperatures didn't put any tires down, and it was a struggle to pass. So I commend NASCAR for changing this to more of an afternoon race where there's a little bit more heat that can be applied to the track. So William Byron won. He actually swept the truck race and the Cup Series race last year with Spire in the trucks and then obviously Hendrick Motorsports in the Cup Series. So it's going to be interesting to see, can Hendrick Motorsports hold on to the dominance of Martinsville Speedway? They've won three of the last five races here at Martinsville Speedway. The other ones... Toyota has been dominant as well. You look at Martin Truex Jr., Christopher Well with his walk-up win.
Which people forget because of Ross Chastain.
Yeah. I mean, people forget that. That's more the nugget. Who won that race?
Yeah.
But
Trivia night in 3 years. Who won?
But it's a Chevy and a Toyota dominant house, and I still expect the same Fords. They haven't won since 2019 with Brad Keselowski, and that's when he was with Penske Racing.
Mm-hmm.
It's, again, Ford's hasn't really been that good at these short tracks, and I expect more of the shame of the same contenders, Hendrick Motorsports being out there for the win.
But typically, Martinsville, outside of the spring race last year, over the last, like, 5-6 years, Martinsville has been, like, the best short track compared to Bristol and Richmond. We've gotten a lot of moments in that time that could be compared to Bristol from like 1995 to 2002.
Yeah.
Lots of anger, some fisticuffs, some punches.
At least I think it was you or somebody else was mentioning that like Bristol and like Richmond, when they use like clips, is from like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, Martinsville, it's timeless as age, as they haven't messed around with that paper clips for a while. And you can use stuff basically from, you know, last year with Ross Chastain's move, or use stuff that's like 20 or 30 years old. It's how timeless Martinsville is.
Bristol's been better. The pavement races has been better the last few years, especially with the whole incident with Chase Elliott and Kevin Harvick and them. There hasn't been any like shoving or anything at Bristol recently, but just as far as memorable races, Bristol's been good.
Yeah.
But on Martinsville, like Martinsville, starting basically with the whole Joey Logano, Matt Kenseth thing in 2015.
Joey Logano versus Denny Hamlin. Denny Hamlin versus Chase Elliott.
Joey Logano, Martin Truex Jr.
I mean, this is where the beef happens. I mean, this is where
Alex Bowman, Denny Hamlin.
Yes, this is what the race time should be. Beef. It's what's for dinner at Martinsville instead of Daytona. I mean, come on, y'all. This is the place to sponsor the track.
Yeah. We should send a note to their executives. So, but no, that race is Sunday at 2 p.m. Central on Fox Sports 1. So one thing I noted before we came down here to record this, Jared, through eight races, we are on the same pace for different race winners as we were at this point last year. We have 7 different winners in 8 races. And guess who's the only repeat winner, like last year?
Byron.
William Byron. So will we get an 8th different winner in 9 races?
You look at numbers and you want to say yes, and I wouldn't be surprised with that. I mean, you still have Alex Bowman, even with Hendrick Motorsports, still not won yet. You have most of Joe Gibbs Racing, they haven't won a point series race. I mean, Christopher Bell just won, but you haven't had, you know, Truex has been good here, Denny Hamlin's been good here. I mean, the numbers are going to say yes, and I'm likely leaning towards we're going to have another different winner. I think someone that we more expect to be locked in that needs to get their punch their ticket into the playoffs, but I think that's going to be happen where we're going to get someone that we expect to win and get in the playoffs to punch their ticket in.
So who do you got?
I say Alex Bowman.
Alex Bowman. Kyle Larson led 68 laps there in the fall race. Anyway, before Christopher Bell won, Christopher Bell led 150 laps. Denny Hamlin led 203. I think the package they have is working so far. It worked at Richmond. It was a good race. Denny Hamlin was fast. Martin Truex Jr. were fast. I'm gonna go with Hamlin.
And that's a good pick as well, too. I mean, if you're not gonna pick Hendrick Motorsports, Hamlin's gonna be your best bet right there.
So I got Denny Hamlin, you got Alex Bowman, both would be a new winner.
Yes.
So all right. But yeah, tune in to Martinsville Speedway Sunday, 2 p.m. Central on Fox Sports 1. We will be back here next week to talk about it. So thank you guys for listening this week to Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden. I'm Daniel McFadden. You can follow me on Twitter at Daniel McFadden. And you can email me via my business email at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. Also, please remember to like, subscribe, share, all that fun stuff. You can catch the video version of this on YouTube as well at the Arkansas Online account. Jared, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at RealJaredHaas.
All right. That will do it for us this week. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks for listening.